Welcome to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori. So glad you can join me where I am every week, right here on WLAW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at WLAW.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. And each show is archived on my website at AnneLiguori.com. That's AnneLiguori.com and distributed on my podcast via Audioboom and iTunes. Support for this program comes from Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 28th, TPC River Highlands, TravelersChampionship.com for more information. Well, first of all, I want to thank everyone who came out to the bookstore, the new bookstore, Finley's Fiction in Southampton this past Sunday, the night before U.S. Open week, to hear my little talk, my preview on the U.S. Open, and who got signed copies of my book, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. It was a beautiful, beautiful evening. And, you know, first of all, it's so great to have a bookstore in Southampton. And thank you, Pippa Gerard, who I've known for years, who is the owner of the bookstore, and to Finley Shaw for inviting me to give this talk and to sign books. There was wine, there was cheese, there was a lot of joy and a lot of excitement about this week at Shinnecock Hills. And hey, if you missed it, you can purchase an autographed copy of my book, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf, at Finley's Fiction. So they have a few more left right there in the bookstore. So really great way to kind of kick off U.S. Open week, this 126th U.S. Open at historic Shinnecock Hills. So far, the week has just been beautiful, just showcasing this historic property in bright, lovely colors, the expansiveness of this historic golf course. I'm going to go over, you know, some of the notes that actually I talked about in my talk at Finley's Fiction. And, you know, because I'm just so, I love golf history, and, you know, you cannot talk about Shinnecock Hills without talking about its rich history. So I'm going to go over a little bit of that, and once you kind of, you know, learn a little bit of the history, it makes it more enjoyable when you watch it on television or, you know, walk the fairways at Shinnecock Hills watching this exciting U.S. Open. So many of you know Shinnecock Hills Golf Club was founded in 1891, and it is the oldest incorporated golf club in the United States. And when they say incorporated, it means its legal status. It was incorporated, and so it was the first, the oldest incorporated golf club. Now, there are clubs, you know, St. Andrews Golf Club in New York was actually founded in 1888 by Scottish immigrant John Reed and the Apple Tree Gang. And St. Andrews Golf Club in New York is actually recognized as the oldest continuously existing golf club in the United States. And as I was doing my research, course called Foxburg Country Club in Pennsylvania came up, and that was founded in 1887. So those were older, but not necessarily, they were not incorporated. The course, Shinnecock Hills, was originally 12 holes and designed by William Davis. Now, Willie Davis, as he was known, was one of the true pioneers of golf in America. He was born in Scotland, and he immigrated to the United States by the early 1880s. In 1885, Shinnecock Hills was expanded to 18 holes. And after four revisions, William Flynn did a complete 18-hole redesign, which opened for the 1931 season. So William Flynn is really one of the most influential architects of golf's golden age. He worked on Merriam Golf Club outside of Philadelphia. He worked on Pine Valley in southern New Jersey. And, you know, this guy, William Flynn, he was truly ahead of his time. He advocated for multiple tee boxes for players of different ability levels. And get this, he warned back then that that increasing ball distance would eventually require longer courses. So can you imagine he brought that up back in, what, the 20s and 30s? And it's certainly a huge, huge issue today. And so when you walk Shinnecock Hills this week, you will see Flynn's influence with his routing over the natural dunes, his strategic bunkering, and his emphasis on angles, all making Shinnecock one of golf's purest tests. And his design was revolutionary. I mean, he arranged the holes in a series of triangles, which I didn't know about, the triangle part. But there's a map where you can actually see the triangles throughout the grounds. And the reason he designed the holes that way were to expose players to the ever-changing wind direction. And later in the show, when you hear from some of the players, a lot of the discussion is about wind. And you heard Jack Druga in my U.S. Open preview show talking about the wind, how he went out and he played a practice round before the 2018 U.S. Open with Tiger Woods. And there were, you know, two flags on the clubhouse. And on the left, the flag was blowing one way. And on the right, the flag was blowing another. And Tiger Woods looked at Jack Druga and said, "What's up with that? How's the wind blowing?" Well, that's what you get at Shinnecock Hills. You get wind blowing in different directions almost in every hole, which makes it so, so tough. In fact, Monday during the practice round, it was blowing like 25 miles an hour, I would say. But it wasn't the prevailing southwest wind. It was more like, what, north, northeast. And it was so different and so severe. And so for the players who went out Monday, they experienced a whole different kind of wind. So you get all those wind changes, you know, from morning to afternoon, different directions. And that is one of the reasons why this golf course is just so, so challenging. Now, Shinnecock Hills is the only course to have hosted the U.S. Open in three different centuries. I mean, can you believe it? Three different centuries. And, you know, the first U.S. Open that they hosted was back in 1896. It actually was the second U.S. Open that the USGA organized. And Shinnecock got the second one. But no, I did not cover that U.S. Open in 1896. But I have covered this is my fifth U.S. Open that I have covered. And It has just been quite the journey, and I'll go through those U.S. Opens in a second, but I do want to bring up that Shinnecock Hills is one of the five founding member clubs of the USGA, and the United States Golf Association was established back in 1894. The other founding member clubs are Newport Country Club, that was the site of the first U.S. Open, and as the U.S. Amateur. St. Andrews was also one of the five founding member clubs, the Country Club of Brookline, and Chicago Golf Club. So, boy, when you're talking about history, those five golf courses are everything you really want to know about golf history in this country. Now, the five that I have covered, and obviously I've loved every minute of it, 1986, Raymond Floyd. He came from three shots back behind Greg Norman to win. He actually beat Chip Beck and Lanny Watkins by two. Greg Norman shot a 4-under 66 in the final round. And Raymond Floyd was 43 years old at the time. His winning paycheck, $115,000. That was in 1986. And I can remember I wasn't living in the Hamptons back then. I was living in the city. And I basically took a train from Penn Station and had this bulky tape recorder and microphone. Remember cassettes back then? And trained out here and interviewed Raymond Floyd after that win. The final round. And we'll fast forward to 1995, covered that one too here at Shinnecock. Corey Pavin hitting his dramatic four wood on the 18th hole en route to a 2-under 68 that day. He won the championship at even par. His prize was 350 $1,000. Fast forward, 2004, Retief Goosen. He shot a 1-over-par 71 in the final round and a 4-under overall, 4-under 276, under par. Wow, for Retief Goosen. He beat Phil Mickelson by 2 shots. Now, the 2004 U.S. Open had a lot of controversy. The USGA watered the par 3 7th on the final day in between groups. And a lot of players were just complaining about they couldn't hold the ball. And the scoring average was so high that day. It was close to 74. No player finished under par in that final round. But I do remember back in 2004 that they did water that green, which was so odd, like in between groups, because that green just got so dry and was not holding balls. It was crazy. Goosen earned $1.125 million for that win. Now, fast forward to 2018. I remember that vividly here at Shinnecock Hills. A lot of the players were complaining about the greens, which were not holding the balls, kind of similar to, you know, to the one in 2004. Zach Johnson actually famously said, in quotes, "We're not on the edge. We've surpassed it. They've lost the golf course." And you remember Phil Mickelson on the 13th green running after that putt and hitting it while it was still moving because it was quickly rolling off the slope. And he incurred a 2-shot penalty and thought that, well, you know, it would have been, he would have gotten even a higher score had he not done that. Well, that was just shocking to see him do that. A lot of people thought he should have been disqualified, which I thought he should have been disqualified. But he later apologized a couple days later, but it was bizarre to watch that. But Brooks Koepka, I remember of all the players complaining, Brooks Koepka did not. And he literally put the blinders on. He shot a plus one, 281 overall. His 4 scores for the 2018 U.S. Open was 75 in round one, 66, 72, and a 68. And remember when Tommy Fleetwood, he carded a 7-under 63 that day in the final round and lost by one. So Brooks Koepka repeated as U.S. Open champion that year, 2018. His prize was $2.16 million. So prize money has certainly, you know, just climbed up quickly. 7 years later, they have not announced the prize money yet for this 2026 U.S. Open. But I can tell you what J.J. Spahn, the winner last year at Oakmont, took home for his win. $4.3 million. And just a couple weeks ago for the U.S. Women's Open, Nellie Korda, she earned $2.5 million for winning the U.S. Women's Open at Riviera Country Club. That was the largest winner's check in the history of women's major championship golf. They had a record $12.5 million purse. So it's not equal to the men's, but through history, they've quickly increased the prize money, particularly in the last, say, 5 years, for the U.S. Women's Open. In this show, you will hear from players who visited the media room earlier in the week and get a keen sense of what they are thinking about in preparation for this grueling test. We're saying that win plays a huge factor is really a huge understatement. You will hear from former U.S. Open champs Matthew Fitzpatrick. He won in 2022. Wyndham Clark was a 2024 champ. 2011 champion Rory McIlroy. Brooks Koepka, as I mentioned, who won in 2017 and 2018. You will also hear from Adam Scott, who is playing in his 100th consecutive major championship, which is just incredible. We'll talk to him about the key to that consistency. And Scottie Scheffler, world number one, is hoping to win a career Grand Slam. The U.S. Open title is the only major he has not won. And in the second part of the show, Annie Bassett, Executive Vice President, Chief Administrative Officer at Travelers, previews the Travelers Championship, the PGA Tour stop on the schedule next week, which is in Cromwell, Connecticut, outside of Hartford at TPC River Highlands. So hope you enjoyed this edition of Sports Interview with Anne Liguori. as the PGA Tour heads to Connecticut for one of its most beloved stops. The Travelers Championship once again takes center stage at TPC River Highlands. Since Travelers became title sponsor in 2007, the company has helped transform the tournament into one of the most player-friendly and fan-friendly events on the schedule, earning a reputation for excellence both inside and outside the ropes. Joining me is Andy Bissette, Executive Vice President and Chief Administrative Officer of the Travelers Companies. Hey, Andy.
Hi, Ann. How are you doing? Great to see you
and good to hear from you again.
Good to see you, too.
Thank you. Well, the Travelers have sponsored this event, since 2007. And curious as to what originally attracted the company to golf and, you know, why has the partnership become such an important part of the Travelers identity?
Sure. I mean, back Nathan and I have been together for our 20th tournament this year. And, way back in the beginning, Travelers has always been a part of golf back in the 80s with the Masters and then West Coast Swing in the early 2000s. And then in about 2005, an opportunity came up with 84 Lumber leaving as a title sponsor in Pennsylvania. And so the tour called us and said, hey, we just took the event that was in Hartford here for so many years and decades off the schedule. We just it was no longer to be. And so we said, oh, my goodness. And so we said, well, when is the date of this 84 Lumber thing? It was a week after the U.S. Open. So sure enough, at the time, Jay Fishman was our chairman and CEO, and I talked about 5 minutes, and we said, let's take it over and do it. And so we did. And since 07, which was our first tournament, you know, we did it mainly because of it. We're a hometown company sponsoring a hometown event, giving to hometown charities and doing good things for our hometown communities. So that's why we did it in day one. You know what? And that still stays the same to today. It's still the same reason we do it. Charity, community is so important to us. It's the ethos of who we are. And we've raised over $35 million since 07 to thousands of charities. And then last year alone, we raised over $4 million to 245 charities. So it's very, very exciting. It fits the ethos of who we are, Travelers. And, last year at Travelers, we gave over $24 million to hundreds of organizations. And just tremendous alignment between the two organizations.
So how has the tournament evolved over these past two decades? I'm sure you've seen, a lot of changes.
Oh, yeah, boy. Back in the beginning, Ann, and I think you remember these days, we probably gave $200,000 to charity the first year. And we had, I think, one player in the top 50 in the world. And it was only because we were crying so vehemently that we didn't have any good players. He felt bad for us and he came. And so we did not have great fields. We did not give much to charity. And we were working off some serious debt that the tournament had incurred. And so we had a lot of things against us. And then, of course, everybody who saw me said, why did you let the tour talk you into taking the week after the U.S. Open? And I naively said, what do you mean? Why is that bad? And he said, well, nobody plays the week after the major. I said, oh, yes, they do. I said, they'll play. I said, I'm going to prove to you that we'll make this one of the best tournaments ever, ever, ever on the PGA Tour. Well, yeah, okay, fine. And nobody believed me. But so that's kind of our story from the beginning to today. And, you know, to go from a couple hundred thousand dollars to charity to over $4 million and to over $35 million since 07. I mean, that's just a great story. And all the charities we've helped, whether it be mental illness, whether it be food insecurity, whether it be military, whether it be homelessness. I mean, all that stuff is so important to what we do and who we are. And it makes you really proud to be a part of what we do here in the community.
I love, Andy, how you and your team have embraced the scheduling of the tournament because it has been all these years following the U.S. Open. You've kind of, you switched the mentality around and you turned it into a positive.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? The funny part, Ann, is that, you know, Meredith Scheffler, Scotty's wife, said to me, Andy, don't change a thing. We're always coming. And so I said, really? I said, always coming. She said, you don't have to do anything more for us. Just, we're always going to come. And I'm like, yeah, did you tell Scotty this yet? So, but it's like, I bet you 3/4, if not all, of the wives love coming here after the U.S. Open. It's a we provide really a fun time, but a serious time for the golfers. The rough is just a little shorter, and the course is just a little bit more playable, and but not challenging. I mean, you look at the average score of our winners, and it is not exceptionally high at all. And so, we've done a lot of good things to the course over the couple of years, over the last 3 or 4 years too, with the PGA Tour, and made it a lot more playable, I would say.
And it's very exciting always down the stretch. It never fails to produce some incredible playoffs or endings or, what's your favorite memory of just a finish of all the years you've been doing the Travelers Championship? What would you
Oh man,
say?
there's so many of them. I think that one has to be the Jordan Spieth chipping it in out of the
Right.
bunker, right? That has to be one of the greatest shots of all time. And I said the other one would be the 8-hole playoff,
That's right.
which was really, really exciting and different. And I never forget, it was like 95 degrees. And Alan Snitzer, our chairman and CEO, and I were walking all 8 holes with our wool jackets
I
on.
remember seeing that so vividly.
Think my cardiologist texted me after 3 or 4 holes and said, "You okay? You look hot." Well, yeah, I am hot. I'm wearing a wool jacket, walking all these. Anyway, so we made a decision that winter. I said, Alan came in and talked to me one time and said, "Hey, I think we should just wear golf shirts with a big Travelers Championship on it. And no jackets." I said, oh, thank goodness. I agree with you completely. Great idea. And so ever since then, we wear a shirt, no jackets.
That is very wise for sure, because the weather always seems to be hot and lovely, really. You get some good weather through the year. So, since becoming a PGA Tour signature event, Andy, how has the tournament really grown from the Travelers Championship perspective?
Up and until 3 or 4 years ago, we had a player field of 156, and we had a cut and such, and it was very, very good. A lot of the players came here. A lot of the players loved it. All of a sudden, I think four, it was four, 4 years. We've been signature for this will be our third signature year. So 2 signature years and one. I think that 1 year they called us elevated. So it was the same basic thing, though,
Sure.
but since we became signature and elevated, what's happened is that, now there's a qualifying, right? So all the players who play here have to qualify, and the qualifications are complicated in some ways. The easiest way is the top 50 off the FedEx Cup point list over last season qualify, and the top 30 in the world golf rankings this year qualify. Any winners of tournaments this year qualify. So in the end, today, as of today, we have 45 of the top 46 players in the world who are eligible to qualify, have qualified, and are coming. We're going to have a field of the top 45 of the top 46 in the world playing here who have qualified. And that obviously leaves out a couple of the live guys because they just can't qualify. But I mean, that's amazing. You're going to see every single great golfer here the next while well, next couple of weeks. It'll be terrific, and it's going to be so much fun. And with no cut, they're here for all 4 days.
I know you've been very close. You've become very close to a lot of these players and the entire families, right? That's why they continue to come back year after year. But I mean, I'm going to put you on the spot. I mean, if you had to choose maybe one player you'd most enjoy playing nine holes with, who would it be and why?
I've only played with 9 holes with one player, believe it or not, in 20 years. And it's because he and his family would spend the summers on Cape Cod, and so it was really special because he is such a nice man, Kevin Streelman, and a good guy and all the way around excellent. But today, boy, that's hard because I have such a great relationship with all the top players. And I would be totally humiliated. I mean, I'm a 15 handicap, and I don't play enough to be good enough. And I'm like, yeah, that makes me really nervous, right? But the I because I and I love them all. Whether you name whether it's Xander or Scotty
Sure.
or Rory or I mean, I any of them if they would tolerate me, I'd play with any of them. They're really terrific people.
Keegan Bradley, who's won the tournament, what, twice? I mean, what a win right before he was captain of the Ryder Cup team.
Yeah, that was terrific. And this year we have a late entry, a qualified Brant Snedeker's qualified, and that's terrific because he's the captain of the President's Cup
That's
team this
right.
year, and so he's going to be pulling his teams together, well, potential team members, because I think he's still evaluating, right, and trying to figure out who's going to be on the team. But that'll be great to have him in the field. Oh my gosh, I mean, and so that'll be really good, and the list goes on and on. It's just we're going to have so many great golfers here, and I always say this that the w w every year we're at the Masters and we see you,
Right.
and I give a hug to all the guys who had to live, because they're still our really good friends, whether it be Bryson DeChambeau or Jon Rahm or Patrick Reed, or the list goes on and on, Brooks Koepka. And I always say to him, "Hey, when you can come back, we'd love to have you back." And they said, "Hey, you'll be the first tournament to come back to." So we've maintained great relationships with all the golfers. And again, whatever happens, happens. But we're here running, I think, a world-class golf event. And actually, it's a world-class sporting event when you think about what we do and how we treat the athletes. And think about it for a minute too, Ann, that what other sport in the world can you go to one place and watch the top 45, top 72 athletes in the world who play that sport?
That's a good
No,
point. Very good
none.
point.
So you come up here to Cromwell, and you can see all over 4 days, you can see the best 45, 72 players in the world, whatever you want to say, and they're all here. They're all here for 4 days, no cut, and playing really, really well, because I think it's such a relief after the US Open that they're r super relaxed. And, having been an athlete myself, sometimes when you relax and just kind of calm down, you can compete at your best, right?
Absolutely.
Had some
That
great
that's the
finishes
only
here.
way you really can compete your best. So I kind of maybe
Yeah.
if you could share to my audience, why this tournament is so player friendly. Maybe talk about some of the nuances that you and your team do to make them feel so welcome.
Oh yeah, I mean, gosh, listen, from the time we fly them in from the US Open, so we have a charter from the US Open. Even this year from Shinnecock, I've got smaller 30-person jets flying them up here with their families, with their caddies, to save them the 3 or 4 hour drive it is to get here, because you got to go
Sure.
around Long Island Sound and all that stuff. So transportation in is great. We now give cars, our car fleet, since we only have 72 players, not 156, we give cars to our caddies. And we're one of the only tour events that do that. And the caddies are super, super, super appreciative. So we do that. But then we have excellent food for them. We have excellent events for them. We put these big red umbrellas on the practice range, and they asked for more of them. So we went out and got more of them for this year. And they like hitting under the umbrella, whether it be hot, rainy, cloudy, whatever it is. And so that's when we have Brew and Moo on the course, thanks to Rory. Rory said, "Hey, over in Europe, a lot of the tournaments will have coffee shops on the practice facility for us." So we have this thing called Brew and Moo, brew coffee, moo for ice cream. So it's ice cream and coffee, and it's a huge hit, huge. And then we have the Big Green Pizza Truck, and which is a phenomenal pizza. Pizza is phenomenal. And we have that on the range for them. And then, the funniest part is we've always put, when the players played 18 holes in the program, they would wait till the 15th hole, because that's where the Big Green Pizza Truck was with all the pizzas made out and the eating. And when we went to 9 and 9, and I won't mention who they were, quite a few of the players called me and said, "Hey, Andy, what are you going to do for us on the front nine?" "Well, the Big Green Pizza Truck's on the back nine. What about the front nine?" "Oh, don't worry about it. I'll put one out there." So now we have a Big Green Pizza Truck on the front nine and the back nine of the Pro-Am Day on Wednesday. So it'll be terrific for everybody.
And it's so fan friendly as well, not just player friendly. So
Yeah.
anything new and different, any new experiences that fans can look forward to this year?
Nathan and I talk all the time about this new app that we have that will actually, when you get on site and you activate it, what you can do is find out where your favorite players are. So now you have a way to find out where they're at, and it'll actually even direct you to get there. And so it's like I don't know, I guess like a wayfinding app for golfers. And so we're really excited about that new addition to what we do. And we've got some big improvements in our food and our accessibility, you know, even a grounds ticket. And we're going to change the name of it because I don't like that grounds ticket. But a basic ticket gets you free parking on site, not just at some school 2 miles away. All the parking for the Travelers Championship is on site. So we have free parking for everybody. It's including your ticket, admission. And then for the grounds tickets, we even have admission to like at least five venues on the course where you can go see, get air conditioning, you can go sit down in chairs and stadium style seating. And so even the simplest ticket can get you phenomenal experiences on the course.
I know, Andy, that the PGA Tour has scheduled a press conference the Tuesday of Travelers Championship week. What are you hoping to hear from that press conference?
You know, just like where we're going. I think that Brian Rolapp has been a terrific partner and he's worked closely. I've got to know him quite well. And he said, Andy, what you guys run there in Connecticut is so superior. It's great, excellent. Don't worry, just keep doing what you're doing. And so I know that overall the PGA Tour has got to make a bunch of changes. And so far from what I've heard, and I haven't heard anything really substantial, but from what I've heard, it's going to make everything better for everybody and make it because it, you know, the PGA Tour is very interesting when you compare it to all the other professional sports. The whole structure of the schedule and how you compete and how you can't bet, and it's a little bit different. So I think that changes are timely. I think changes are going to be good. I think it'll be very, very helpful to hear that day. And I think there's going to be a lot of media in that press conference because everybody wants to hear where the PGA Tour is headed. But I think that, you know, a lot of the things that we've been hearing bits and pieces about to make it more competitive is really important. It's got to be more competitive. It's got to be more that it's got to be just more focused on where can you go to see the best of the best. And so I think that a lot of those changes will be announced on Tuesday. And you know, and the PGA Tour has been a great partner. And Wednesday is still our Pro-Am day. And we still have you know, one group of Carson Daly is going to play with Dylan Dreyer. And we haven't put all these groups together yet. But Chris Berman will be with Doug Flutie and Andre Tippett. We've got a couple of the great coaches from UConn playing, Mike Cavanaugh, Coach Candle. And so we're putting together a really good, like I would call it three foursomes maybe, for that day too as well.
All right. So if the CEO of the PGA Tour announces that the schedule has changed, I just have this feeling you'll embrace like any week that, you know, the Travelers Championship gets, right? I mean, you've made every, you make it work, right? No matter where you are.
Oh, yeah, no matter, we're going to be a great partner with the tour, and we're going to work really hard, and we'll work with what we got. And look at nobody thought we could make it work like this the week after the U.S. Open. People called me not stupid, but they called, way back in 2007, they said, "Do you really know what you're doing?" No, that's okay. I'll figure it out. And so it's always been good. And but you know, you have to have a great partnership. And what we've had with Nathan Grube, our tournament director, and his staff of 15 or so, and our 30 or so people who work part-time on the tournament here at Travelers, we have such a great collaboration and a great team that works together. It's been really, really terrific. And you know, and the PGA Tour has been great too. I mean, they've had how many important announcements have they had at our tournament over
That's
the last
right.
4 years, maybe 3, 4 years? It's been terrific. And you know, we've got some special people showing up this year, and we've got everything on Tuesday, but we also have, you know, they're filming a Netflix movie called The Hawk, and we're actually excited to have Lonnie the Hawk Hawkins on site on Wednesday and hanging out. And you know, it's going to be a lot of fun. Former PGA Tour star trying to make a comeback—that's the movie. And so we have something different every day. I mean, you can come see these celebrities on Wednesday. You can see the Netflix piece and see Lonnie Hawkins and or the golfers, right? The golfers are very approachable. on Wednesday as well.
Everything's happening at the Travelers. I have two more for you, Andy.
Sure.
And this is more of a philosophical, deeper question. What lessons from golf, whether it's integrity or patience or resilience, translate into the culture at Travelers, would you say?
Wow. I think there's giving back and supporting your community and charities is so important. And all of the golfers are like that. I mean, this is a special group of young men. I mean, it's just really special. And so I think giving back, being part of the community, supporting charities that are important to you and your family and your life are important is really, really good. I think the whole attitude of continuous improvement, always getting better. Every one of these guys is out there practicing on the range for hours, right? They're trying to get better. They're trying to improve every little skill of the game. And that's like what we do here at Travelers. We, whether it be actuarial science or underwriting the risks of our business, we're always trying to get better, and we turn over every stone, and then we turn over more stones, and then we turn over more stones. And so that is very much like Travelers in so many ways. And I think that the final one is that as you work that hard to be successful, it's really important to have a positive attitude. You have to be positive about everything that's happening. It's so easy to get negative on stuff. And I mean, everybody goes there, but you gotta, it travels. We have a great culture here. And people are generally speaking very positive and goal oriented. And that's just like golf. Golf is, they're all goal-oriented, they're all trying to get better, and they have a positive mental attitude, because you can have the best technique in the world. You can be the strongest person in the world. You can have all that stuff. And if you don't have a positive mental attitude, you're just not going to win.
I love those comparisons. I truly do. Golf is a metaphor for life, and there's so many comparisons between, the Travelers Championship and golf and
Yeah.
life. So there you have it. Let's end on that because I just love that. Andy Bissett, thank you so much. Looking forward to the Travelers Championship, June 22nd to the 28th at TPC River Highlands, Cromwell, Connecticut, and tickets are available at travelerschampionship.com. Thanks, Andy.
Hey, Anne, thank you so much for your support.
Appreciate it. Can't wait to see you.
Bye-bye.
Can you talk a little bit about how perhaps different it looks today than what 2018 and the last time you played?
Yeah, it's obviously much more greener for now. I know that the forecast doesn't look particularly dry or hot. I think it's quite humid already out there, so that's obviously going to keep some moisture in the greens compared to previous US Opens here. Fairways are a little bit wider than last time as well. But yeah, for me personally, I want it to get as dry and firm as possible as US Opens do, and just see where that takes us.
Would you rather play on a day like today, a practice round with the wind and the gusts, or would you prefer calm and just to practice some of your shots, or do you like practicing in this kind of wind?
I'd probably prefer calm, to be honest. Yeah, I think for practice, it's nice to have the calm to kind of get an understanding of the golf course a bit easier when, there might be a hole today that I've played where I've hit one club and I might never hit that again, the rest of the week. So it's not really, you're not really learning anything there. I feel like at least if you've got a baseline for when it's calm, you can kind of pick and choose as to how that's going to work for the rest of the week.
Can you talk about playing at such a historic venue? You've done well at the Country Club of Brookline, obviously, that you kind of embrace the history and what it's like to play championship golf at such a historic place like Shinnecock Hills.
Yeah, it's always awesome to play this golf course, golf courses like this. When I think of US Opens, that's what I think of. You think of these historic golf courses that have got such great memories of great championships and, great past winners and whatnot. And to me, that's what a US Open is. You go to these historic golf courses and they're set up a certain way. You grew up watching US Opens. It was tough. It was tight off the tee. It was firm. It was really hot. And I feel like Shinnecock summarizes that very, very well, particularly its history here and you know, even just going out there now, seeing the golf course as it is, it's kind of how you picture a US Open. And for me, I enjoy those ones the most.
Does it inspire you to play these kinds of historic courses?
I don't know if inspire is the right word. You know, I prefer playing these ones. You know, I do prefer playing these ones. There's no doubt about that. I think they make for better championships overall, I would say.
What part of your game, Wyndham, do you think has to be flawless to do really well here?
Gosh, for me specifically, I feel like anytime I'm in the fairway, I can play some really good golf. I know it's a little bit wider off the tee, which I'm excited about. But then I'd say the biggest challenge at Shinnecock is the greens. And so you have to really be in the right places. So the second thing I would say is probably your speed putting. If you can eliminate kind of the three putts or leaving yourself really challenging putts, I think that's the person that's going to have the most success.
And how about the wind today? I mean, was it a good test for a practice round for you?
Yeah, you know, the one thing today is I actually didn't do a practice round. I came in earlier and did some work. This wind is not the normal wind. So if there's any day to take any time to take a day off, it was today, because I think the normal wind, I think, is down off the left on one, is more of the southwest wind. So the wind is always a challenge here, and that's kind of what everyone talks about. I'm just happy I didn't have to play it today, so it would be something different. But, yeah, I mean, these greens with wind, that's going to be a real challenge, and I think whoever's patient and you know, you're gonna miss some putts that maybe you normally would make, but you also might make some. So you just have to handle the punches that Shinnecock's gonna give you and stay really patient out here.
And what do you think the key to that longevity is for this incredible streak?
I would say probably overall, a certain level of focus has been required over the 25 years to maintain, I'll call it, golf at this elite level. Major championship level has taken a lot of focus to do that. I think there are lots of little things that you could break down after that, but you know, I'm quite proud that I've managed to keep my focus this long and keep pushing through. Obviously not all years and all weeks out here are easy, and you're playing full of confidence, managed to keep it all together for a long time.
Is there any lesson, Adam, that you wish your younger self would have known?
There are probably lots. I think the younger self knew a lot of things. I mean, there must have been some level of determination setting out and all, you know, positive attributes towards playing golf at a high level. But I don't think my younger self would have thought I'd still be playing, actually, at this point. I love playing golf at this level, and it's really all I know how to do, so I'm going to keep trying to do it my best for as long as I possibly can.
Welcome back to the interview area. We are here with 2011 champion Rory McIlroy. Rory, just some initial thoughts on Shinnecock?
Yeah, it's a great golf course. I think it's, if you know, everything going the way everyone wants it in terms of weather, you know, setup, you know, I think it's the best championship test in the country. I think it tests all aspects of the game. Driving, iron play, you need to have your wits about you around the greens. It's a lot of strategy, thoughtfulness, and yeah, look, it's, you know, it's a golf course where it can turn very quickly. You know, you get a day like yesterday with a lot of wind and dry, clear conditions like this. And, you know, I think that's, you know, we're just going to have to be mindful of that as the week goes on. But it's a wonderful golf course, and looking forward to the test that it's going to provide this week.
It is a little different than 2018. I know you made a few advanced trips out, maybe even around the Ryder Cup. What did you maybe pick up on the course from those?
Yeah, the width of the fairways is a little bit different. But again, like with looking at the forecast and you know, there's going to be a lot of crosswinds. You know, those fairways are going to play a lot, especially if it gets a little firmer, they're going to play a lot narrower than, you know, the 45 yards wide that, you know, they average. So, and you're hitting across quite a few fairways as well. You know, there's a lot of different, like, slight angles. Think about, like, the third tee shot, for example. Think about the sixth tee shot. Obviously, you got 9 and 18, which are pretty unique driving holes as well. So, you know, even though it's wide and has a lot of width, it has the potential to play a lot narrower.
Can you talk a little bit about the strategy and the imagination required to do really well here, perhaps on 1 or 10, 11, 12? I mean, there's so much variety.
Yeah, there is. I think one of the big, like, you look at a hole like 1, you know, if you get the right wind direction, there's the possibility of getting it up close to the green, but then you're sort of thinking, is it worth it? Is it worth risking putting the ball in the fescue on the wrong side? And, you know, so I think this course, it demands so much patience, and it can really lure you into taking on things that you probably shouldn't. 13 is a good example. You know, if you get the right wind direction as well, you can get it close to the green there. And to me, they're very, you know, they're big playing areas, big fairways, pretty big greens. But I think, you know, a lot, especially with the weather forecast and the conditions, and, you know, it looks like we're going to get some pretty heavy wind for a couple of the days anyway. Like, if you can get your ball into the middle of the greens here and just putt to the corners wherever the flags are going to be, that's never going to be a bad strategy. And I think that's a lot, you know, the strategy that I've employed at the US Open over the past few years has been a lot like that. And that's served me well. And, you know, it hasn't gotten me the trophy, but it's gotten me pretty close a few years. But I definitely feel like I've become a lot better of a US Open player by trying to really stay patient throughout the week and not taking on too much.
Is it more about restraint and patience on this kind of golf course? Or I know you kind of try to maintain the same mentality every time you go out there, but anything different here on this very challenging test?
I mean, a lot of it's execution. I mean, and then there's definitely an element of patience to it, because you can hit some pretty decent shots and find yourself in some spots that are quite brutal, especially when you get some high winds. So, yeah, a lot of it just comes down to execution. But, you know, I think patience is a large part of it as well.
Considering you've said on many, many occasions that your whole goal is to be as prepared as possible when you get to the first tee, how do you guard against just knowing this opportunity at the Open is different than previous ones, just with what's at stake and all?
I mean, I think, you know, it's kind of a funny thing. It's like, yeah, if I win this tournament, that would be amazing. But I think then I show up the next week and it's like, okay, now Scotty's won the Grand Slam. He's won all these golf tournaments. Now where do we go from here? And so no matter what, I think as a player and as a professional athlete, you're never going to live up to the expectations of people. And I think sometimes that's a little bit of the fallacy in our sport, is that, like, oh man, if I win the US Open, then I'm going to be satisfied. I'm going to be, you know, I've won all the tournaments, then my career is essentially over and I've accomplished everything I could want to accomplish. But then I think the goalposts are always just moved further and further. You know, if you took my career from where I was as a college player, I would have, you know, extremely overachieved being in this position. I wasn't the best college player. I had a decent college career, but by no means was I a, you know, can't miss type of prospect. You know, the guys that I came out that I turned pro at the time were better than me. You know, there were guys, you know, you look at like Colin Morikawa and Hovland and Matt Wolf, you know, those guys were winning tournaments immediately when they turned pro, and I had a little bit of a slower burn in terms of the development of my career. And for me, you know, would it be a dream to win the US Open? Of course. But at the end of the day, like the Grand Slam has never been a motivating factor for me. You know, I always just wanted to be the best version of myself, and that got me this far. And so when it comes to this golf tournament, you know, like I said, I'm going to step up on the first tee, remind myself that I've done everything possible I could in order to play well. And now it's just a matter of going out there and trying to execute and, you know, kind of going back to enjoying the competition versus feeling like you have to win for some reason.
How close do you think are you form-wise to 2018?
I feel just as good. I think ball striking is even better than what it's been. Putting, I had a great week putting last week. So I'm excited for the challenge. This course will be quite difficult. You're going to have to be creative around this place and really, really work on your angles coming in. So I'm excited about it, and game feels good.
In addition, here's John Bodenhammer, the USGA Chief Championship Officer, responding to my question at Wednesday's USGA Annual Press Conference. I know it's 10 years away, but can you talk about the importance of having the U.S. Women's Open here in 2036, what that means for women's golf and the USGA?
I'm hoping that 2 weeks ago answered that question for every fan, as opposed more than I'll answer it. I mean, if you watched the women play Riviera and what happened there over the weekend and the Sunday finish, I made this comment to JB. I've, you know, for 15 or 16 years of my life, I've been standing on the 18th green, ready to give somebody a trophy. And if we're being honest, by the time you get to Sunday afternoon, late in the day, you're thinking, somebody win. We got planes to catch. We got the net. And I was standing there saying, please be a playoff. Please be a playoff. And it was mostly because it's 5:00. We're on NBC. We're going to play 10 and 18 as a playoff win. And then Nelly did what she did. And I was the first person to run up and hug Jason or Caddy. Like, it's just, you know, you become a fan in those moments. And I just think Riviera created this glorious stage. I can't tell you how many players, and you know, I know a lot of players on that tour, came up to me and said, you know, told me about other tour players, men, shots they'd seen on different holes. And like, I didn't realize the shot into number two was this long. I didn't realize the shot up 18 was so blind. I mean, things that we may all sort of take for granted, but young, best female athletes in the world telling us that I get a chance to do something I've seen on TV, and how different some of it was versus what they experienced on just, you know, just being televised. And I mean, those are glorious moments. If you don't think walking up 18 in this place, you know, with your hat blowing sideways, probably, sorry, JB, and you know, and getting to the finish line here in 36 at Shinnecock is special. I mean, JB rattled off the lineup of the U.S. Open. I would give you the U.S. Women's Open is certainly just as strong.
My thanks to my guest, Andy Bassett, and to Mike Goodsell in production. And remember what the great Arnold Palmer had to say, which is particularly true about this very challenging Shinnecock Hills golf course, this U.S. Open venue. Arnie said, success in this game depends less on strength of body than strength of mind and character. That's right. The guys this weekend will have to keep that in mind. Who will win this 126th edition of the U.S. Open played at Shinnecock Hills? Have a great week, and I look forward to talking with you next week right here on Sports Interview with Anne Liguori.